I'm Tanzina Vega, and you're listening to The Takeaway, and thanks for spending some time with us today. I recently tweeted about something I called a, quote, pandemic wall. The burnout from working nonstop, no break from the news, childcare, and isolation. And according to my social media feeds, tens of thousands of you are feeling the same. From Hawaii to Spain, many of you got in touch with me to say that you were feeling it too, hitting this wall as the weight of work, economic uncertainty, isolation, and everything else just keeps piling on top of us, all while living through a deadly global pandemic. And what we're feeling is different than a kind of pandemic fatigue, where you're just tired of wearing a mask or social distancing. This is something a little deeper. It's a feeling of total exhaustion and of being so overwhelmed that it's hard to see the light ahead. Now, for months, here on the show, we've been talking about the growing mental health pandemic happening alongside the COVID-19 crisis. And according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, 53% of adults said that the pandemic was having a negative impact on their mental health. Now, as we pass the one-year mark of COVID-19 here in the United States, I want to check in on that and to understand why so many of us are hitting the pandemic wall now, and more importantly, how we can find some relief. I'm joined by Dr. Jessica Stern, a clinical psychologist and clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at NYU Langone Health. Dr. Stern, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Dr. Suzanne Song is the director of the Division of Child, Adolescent, and Family Psychiatry at the George Washington University Medical Center. Dr. Song, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Dr. Song, why did my tweet get so many responses?
I think it's because clearly you resonated with so many people, and many people right now are feeling ashamed and isolated with their feelings, but everybody is depleted. We are exhausted. We can't focus. There's no motivation. People have lost their jobs. They want work, or they're working and it's too much work. So while these terms are going around, like you mentioned, the pandemic fatigue and burnout, the pandemic wall, as you've described, people are wondering if they're depressed. So burnout, I think, just to define a little bit, it's when we're exhausted, we're detached, we have lower productivity, we have a sense of ineffectiveness. And a common metaphor for burnout is of a battery running out. So if you have a toy, the battery runs out, the toy stops working. But let's say you're a parent. There's no parent that can just stop parenting. So the best thing that I've heard around burnout is from someone named Dr. Drummond. He's an expert on physician burnout. So he relates burnout to a bank account for your energy. So at the bank, if you overdraw your account, they don't close your account. They charge you fines and interest. So they actually accelerate your downward spiral when you go below zero. And I feel like that's what the pandemic, the politics, the social violence, that's what it's been doing. It's dipping into our emotional reserves.
And a lot of people are feeling that way. Dr. Stern, some of the responses to this were interesting. And I just sort of, you know, tweeted this off the top of my head, really. And I was shocked to see so many people responding. But a lot of people were saying that the fact that you could name it was comforting. Is it important, Dr. Stern, to name what we're feeling? Does that help us feel better, or at least to start to feel better?
Absolutely. I think what you did so beautifully is you took this very deep, dark, vague feeling that people were experiencing, and you put a name to it, and you helped people identify what it was that they were experiencing. And I think it's sort of like having this dark cloud over your head that you don't really know exactly what it is, but when you're able to spot it and say, ah, that's what it is, that's what I'm experiencing, it makes it feel a little bit less scary because you know what's happening for you. And it's also so validating because then you can explain it to other people and share that sentiment with other people. And it doesn't feel like this random, unexpected experience that people are having. And so putting a face to the name can be so extremely powerful for people. And I thank you for doing that in that tweet.
And I'm wondering, Dr. Stern, is there something about, it almost feels like people were somewhat ashamed, and sort of pivoting off of what Dr. Song was saying about, you know, lifting, you know, pointing this out and a lot of people feeling like they're falling behind. Is there something endemic to our culture in the United States that makes us hesitant to say, you know, these things, to say, look, I'm hurting and I'm not doing well?
Absolutely. I think there are a couple of pieces here that are particularly powerful and relevant. I think the first one is that we as a society still have a long way to go in terms of reducing stigma related to mental health. And we are, in general, a very go-go-go society, which has its blessings for sure. But I think that oftentimes for people, when they feel like they can't do the things that they want to do, or they can't achieve, or it feels like they can't stay on top of the various different responsibilities that they have, they feel like they're failing, or they feel like there's something wrong with them. Or something I hear often is, it feels like I'm broken. And I think that can be really upsetting for people. And what happens with shame is, when we don't talk about it, it feeds the shame, which then prevents us from talking about it and creates this very nasty cycle. Brené Brown has talked a lot about this. And I think it can be challenging. And I think what happened at the beginning of the pandemic is a lot of people were excited about how they can use their time and, sourdough starters and using their time to be more productive. And while those were helpful coping mechanisms, I think there were a lot of people who were feeling overwhelmed by the fact that they actually couldn't be so productive because, of course, they were stressed and anxious and hopeless and helpless. And so I think seeing this, you know, sentiment around them where it seems like everyone else was keeping it together when in fact that wasn't really true, I think really fostered a lot more shame in people that took a lot of time for people to be open about.
Dr. Song, I want to pick up on that idea because I'm wondering, how has our mental health collectively, and of course, all of us are individuals with unique circumstances, but have you noticed a shift in how people, at least generally, have felt about the pandemic at the, you know, in the spring versus how they're feeling now?
Yeah, I think we are experiencing a collective demoralization. And I have had so many of my patients, my friends, my family just asking if we are clinically depressed because we're still, you know, I think many people think this pandemic has been almost 1 year. We know now there's a new normal. We're all, you know, we're all used to finding out ways to get our groceries and still we're feeling really incompetent. So I think it's important to distinguish between being demoralized and being clinically depressed. They both make us want to stay in bed all day, make it hard to concentrate, motivate. But depression, true clinical depression, is an individual biological problem. Demoralization is due to the society in which we live. So I think collectively we're feeling demoralized.
And Dr. Song, one of the interesting things about the tweet was that I got responses from parents who could identify, but there were also people who said, look, I don't even have kids and I'm feeling like this. Or there were people who were elderly folks who said, look, I feel totally isolated. One woman said she had lost her husband, that this was, you know, a very difficult year. Someone else reached out and said they were struggling, you know, with you know, really heavy issues that were surrounding depression, et cetera. So are there certain groups of people who might be feeling this more than others right now?
Yeah, so the studies right now are showing there are three groups that are popping up. So for the first are young people. The UN defines youth as age 18 to 25 years old. And developmentally, it makes sense. You know, youth need peers to interact, to shape their identities and who they want to become, who they are. Peers are everything in that age group. I'm seeing that in my clinical practice. Most of my young people, so the kids who are either their seniors in high school or they're in their first years of college, those are kind of my most serious cases right now. They're suicidal, actively suicidal, and really struggling. The second group are Black and Hispanic individuals. And that's also kind of understandable. They're witnessing their communities be disposable by law enforcement, by healthcare, education, by the pandemic. And then the third category right now are essential workers, because they're experiencing this vicarious trauma at witnessing the massive loss of death on top of the demoralization when people aren't really taking the pandemic seriously.
Dr. Stern, one of the things that really hit me was the length of this pandemic. And it happened, you know, I gave birth weeks before the pandemic really hit the United States. And it hit home for me now that I have a close to 1-year-old child, how long this has been going on. Is the length of the pandemic contributing to how we're feeling collectively?
Most definitely. There's a level of chronicity now that we've hit where this has become a chronic problem. And the more time goes on, the more time we feel that fatigue building and building. And while we do have this opportunity to learn from it as time goes on, at the same time, it's sort of like compounding interest. So to go back to Dr. Song's analogy before, is the interest keeps growing, and it feels like we are drastically having to change our lives in a way that no longer feels temporary. And this is very, very exhausting for individuals. And many people are going a long span of time without seeing loved ones. And the more time that goes on, the more we're feeling the permanence of this all. And even if we do come out of this at some point in the next couple of years, it feels very fatiguing because it's built up for such a long span of time, which is very overwhelming for people.
Of course, we also need to acknowledge that we are in January, which is a month that I think typically for many people, there's something called Blue Monday, which is, you know, one of the quote unquote saddest days of the year people talk about in January. It's the post-holiday slump. Is that also exacerbating this, Dr. Stern?
Yes, for sure. So we know that winter can be a very hard time for people in general, even pre-pandemic. So oftentimes people will have the seasonal blues, or in a much more clinical capacity will have what's called seasonal affective disorder, where, you know, it's cold in a lot of parts of the world and it's darker, and people definitely experience more sadness or more loneliness or things like this. And when you have that on top of the pandemic, it definitely creates a lot more of that that difficulty, that struggle that people are having. And so having to navigate both of those at the same time is difficult. And I think for a lot of people in parts of the world, there was this opportunity in the summer and fall to sort of re-engage with some activities by being outdoors and things like this. And it felt a little bit nice for a couple of moments in some places, and to have to go back to being very isolated in cold places for a lot of parts of the world is just very overwhelming and definitely creates a lot of exacerbation of the isolation. So definitely dual struggles.
Dr. Song, you made a distinction earlier that I'd love to dig into a little bit. You said that there's a difference between being demoralized and having clinical depression. How can people tell the difference?
When we are demoralized, it's a subjective incompetence and a hopelessness that we feel when we witness or have to engage in something that goes against our moral compass. It's kind of an existential distress. So when we are feeling really down because innocent people are being murdered because of their skin color, or we have someone threatening our very democracy in an insurgence, or our kids can't feel safe going to school, or there's conflation with pleasure, with being irresponsible about the pandemic, public health measures. These are all moral challenges that leave us in despair. But clinical depression is when we have a lot of negative self-talk. You know, we can't stand who we are, we feel worthless, we dislike everybody, and there's really very little relief. There's no periods of laughing, no energy to get out of bed, let alone exercise. Whereas in demoralization, we can still have moments of happiness. You know, we still love our friends, our family, and we can still go out for a run, but we're just feeling an existential despair.
And Dr. Stern, that those moments of, you know, hope, I think a lot of folks were saying to me that they were hoping that the minute, you know, the clock turned to 2021, and the administration, the presidential administration changed, and potentially a vaccine was on the horizon, that things were going to change. Is that giving people some hope? Is there spark for a hope with that? I mean, are expectations in line with reality there?
There definitely is a lot of hope. And I think, like you're talking about, a lot of people are looking for markers of change and almost anchors to look to know that something new is coming around the corner. And thankfully, we have a couple of those in terms of government, in terms of vaccine, obviously the new year. And so it's giving people a little bit more energy to kind of get started and to look forward to what's yet to come. The struggle is that obviously all of these things are going to take some time. And so I think some people were hoping for almost the sense of magic that things were going to come back to normal or change rather quickly. And it's going to take a little bit more time there. So there's a little bit of patience that's required, but definitely there is something to look forward to. Absolutely.
And then, Dr. Song, given that the pandemic isn't going to end tomorrow, how do we put together a toolkit to navigate this reality, especially if we're not feeling so great? Is it a day-by-day thing? Is it an hour-by-hour thing? Is there a longer-term way that we should be thinking?
Yeah, I think, you know, just to build off of the hope, you know, hope is one thing that people are turning to right now. And I think we have to remember that hope is it's something you do, not necessarily something you feel. And so it's okay to build a practice of hope where we're intentionally trying to move towards not avoiding by like sleeping in bed all the time or opening up that second bag of Oreos, but we're actually engaging in life. And it doesn't mean we're engaging actively physically necessarily, because that's very hard for a lot of people right now who are feeling down. It means that we engage with ourselves, with who we know ourselves to be. So we build hope as a practice. We think about our own values. You know, this pandemic has led to demoralization in part because the pandemic has tested our values as a society. You know, will we look out for each other? Will we sacrifice others for our own gain? Will we put the interests of the economy over the wider whole? Will our leaders rise to the challenge, or will they play political games? You know, we should think about how we want to answer all of these questions and enact our values. And so all of that can help to create a practice of hope.
And Dr. Stern, for those people who are listening right now who might say, you know, I think I'm more than demoralized, or I'm feeling like I'm slipping into something else that doesn't feel familiar, but definitely doesn't feel good. Are there resources that people should consider?
Definitely. I think now is a wonderful time to seek out therapy or counseling of some sort, potentially psychiatry for medication consultation and management. And now can be really the best time to invest in those types of things and to take care of your mental health moving forward. And I like to think about it as almost like we go to the dentist to either prevent cavities or to prevent new cavities. And so too, we should be taking care of our mental health in very much the same way. And you can build these toolkits for yourself that you can use for the rest of your life. And so seeking out a mental health provider can be extremely helpful. And in order to do that, there are a couple of ways that you can do that. One is to visit Psychology Today, where you can put in information about your insurance and your location and any specifications that you have for the type of therapy you're looking for. You can also go through your insurance panel if you have insurance, or also see if you have out-of-network benefits to visit a local outpatient clinic or a mental health center. Also, word of mouth can be truly helpful, and to look for a couple of different nonprofit organizations that are available for typically underrepresented individuals. And so there are beautiful organizations that are emerging for therapy for Black girls or individuals who are underrepresented in terms of economic status or veterans or things like this. And so please feel free to use the internet as your resource and look for some of these wonderful nonprofit organizations that are popping up and have also long existed, because there might be a really good fit for you out there for sure.
Dr. Jessica Stern is a clinical psychologist and clinical assistant professor of psychiatry at NYU Langone Health. And Dr. Suzanne Song is the director of the Division of Child, Adolescent, and Family Psychiatry at the George Washington University Medical Center. And if you or someone you know is having suicidal thoughts, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK, 1-800-273-8255, or text HOME to the Crisis Text Line at 741-741.